You're listening to Greater LA, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis on KCRW. 1 week ago today, SAG-AFTRA and the big Hollywood studios announced a deal to end a near four-month actor strike.
It's a great deal. It's a triumphant deal. It's a historic deal. It's a seminal deal. All those great words describe this deal.
That's union chief and actor Fran Drescher speaking to NBC. It's been a really tough go of it this year, with writers striking even before the actors and a near full production shutdown for many so-called below-the-line workers. So with Hollywood getting back to work now, how are things looking for the folks who are behind the scenes? Melissa Way is a stunt driver and actor. Melissa, welcome.
Thank you.
Matthew Atzenhofer is a Hollywood set dresser. Matt, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you very much.
We spoke to both of you as the writer's strike was getting underway. So both of them are done, right? The writers went on strike, they settled. The actors went on strike, they are in the process of settling. What were your initial reactions when the SAG strike was put on hold, you know, pending ratification and all that, last week?
I can start a little relief. And then I was curious about what was in the contract.
Do you know what's in the contract? Have you read?
I've been to one of the meetings, and then I've been reading a lot online. Matt, you can speak to what you know.
Well, as far as the contracts are concerned, I honestly have no idea. But when I did hear it was settled, or pending settlement, I was also relieved myself in thinking that at some point soon we should all be getting back to work.
Well, all right. So in the time since then, since the announcement a week ago, has there been any movement? Melissa, have you been getting calls, or are you like, okay, things are starting to ramp back up now?
I have been notified by my agent to get my headshots moving again and things like that, just getting my package tightened up again. But it feels more like, hey, get everything ready for January, because we're going to have the Thanksgiving break next week, and then things kind of don't really shake out until after the holidays, typically. Hollywood goes on a holiday break usually. But there have been, you know, commercials and things like that going on in the meantime. I haven't gotten a lot, but I know that's been going on in the meantime. So I do know some people have been working in like New Mexico and things like that. I know the phone rung for a couple of people that I know.
Matt, what about you? Phone ringing?
No, not at all. Honestly, that's okay for me right now because I'm still recovering from knee replacement surgery. I wouldn't be cleared to work until December. And honestly, I don't think it's going to happen until January.
Are you expecting, like, after the beginning of the year, after the holiday break, for things to really start picking up?
I'm definitely expecting it to pick up. I'm hopeful on specifically what I want to get. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but I do expect it to pick up. And I expect it to be really busy for quite a while we try to catch up to all the missed opportunities over the last however many months. I haven't worked since February, so it's been a while.
Melissa, the last time we spoke to you back in May, you were planning to go back to school to get your commercial driver's license. Were you able to do that?
Yeah, I actually I take the test tomorrow. So
wow.
I took all my schooling and got a whole bunch of stuff done in the meantime, and it definitely adds to my repertoire of things I can do. So it's been a very successful break for me.
How have you been getting by in the past few months? I mean, without work?
I've been doing a lot of using my savings account. I've done some valet. I work for a high-end valet company. I've been using all of my skills. So I'm a driver, and I can do driving things. So I do a lot of driving things.
Matt, you said you had knee replacement surgery.
Yes.
Obviously, that's expensive, and you've had to get by as well. How did you do it in the past few months?
Fortunately, for better part of 30 years, I've been paying into the disability insurance, and I've used it these last bunch of months. Just took my union's advice and we knew we were going to be shut down for a long time. And they said, you know, take care of your all the physical things that we avoid and ignore when we're working. So I did physical therapy for my back, for my tendonitis in my elbow, and then finally got to a knee replacement surgery.
What are you hearing from other folks, you know, coworkers, people you know, who are also below the line workers, people behind the scenes in Hollywood? Is there frustration that it took so long to come to a deal? Is there hope that this deal means that, you know, because you're not a member of that union, right? So it's not your contract. Do you hope to make more money, that it'll, I dare say, trickle down to the rest of everybody?
Well, obviously, trickle down doesn't exist in any shape or form. But what does happen, and it always does happen when separate unions negotiate their own contract, it invariably helps other unions. And since we're not in the same union, but we're incredibly linked to one another because we're in the same business. We, as the IATSE folk, we should benefit somewhat from this negotiation because that has been the trend, usually, not always, but usually. I'm hopeful that it will help us because our contract is up, I think, in a year and a half.
It's up next year, and I know there's some consternation there. You almost went on strike last time. IATSE is the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees. Matt, you know, as it pertains to IATSE, we talk about the grueling contract negotiations. A lot of union members were unhappy with the leadership after the last contract negotiation. How do you think things will play out going forward? Is there, you know, get out your crystal ball.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not a prognosticator, but I can say that I'm hopeful that we learned from the last contract, and I'm hopeful that we've learned from these two negotiations with the writers and SAG that we will make some more strides. That's all I can do is stay hopeful.
But do you see the infighting, which is, by the way, something that we're about to talk about even more? Do you see that consternation between, like, well, maybe the union isn't really recognizing everything that we need to do going forward?
Well, I can speak specifically to my local 44, and at the meetings, there's a definite tone change with the members that I feel like we're getting more and more involved, and that's a good thing. And the meetings aren't us just yelling at the dais. It's back and forth, and there's some positive attitudes, and there's more turnout, and where I think we've got a good group of people who are trying to, you know, get everybody together and organize our local so we know what we're going to ask for so we can get it the next time. So that's what gives me hope. It's not like in years ago when I didn't even go to meetings and when we talked about this stuff, it was like, yeah, whatever, the union's not going to do anything. I feel like there's been a bit of a sea change with the current leadership of my local. I'm speaking specifically to Local 44. I can't speak to any other locals. I don't go to those meetings.
Well, thank you both for coming on and giving us an update on where you are. Melissa Way, good luck on your commercial driver's license test tomorrow.
Thank you.
Matthew Atzenhofer, thank you for coming on as well. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. And also good luck, Melissa. I hope you crush it.
Thank you so much.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Union members with IATSE are getting more and more involved, perhaps as an indication that they're not fully happy with their representation. And that comes just ahead of negotiations that are scheduled for next year. IATSE represents tens of thousands of people like Matt who keep Hollywood running behind the scenes, from grips to sound mixers, animators, set builders, and more. Their contract is set to expire in July, and it's a contract more than half the union voted against last time around. Well, now some rank-and-file members want to see a change in the way the union handles those negotiations. Victor Buzzi is a sound mixer for films, and Nora Meek is a storyboard artist and writer who works in animation, and they're both members of something called Crew. It's a new caucus of IATSE workers pushing to make the union more democratic. And welcome to you both.
How you doing, Steve?
Hi.
Victor, there are a lot of trades represented by IATSE, as I mentioned, and the contract we're talking about here is what's called the Hollywood Basic Agreement, which affects all of them. Tell me about the kinds of things that are in it.
Well, the Basic Agreement focuses on the 13 Hollywood locals, and we're trying to change some things about it, like how long do we work? How long are our turnaround times? Meal penalties, like how long does it take before we incur a penalty for breaking for lunch? All these things are things that we want to change. That's in the basic agreement right now.
Nora, y'all have, with IATSE, when it comes to contract negotiations, when you vote, it's sort of like a presidential election, right? You vote for delegates. So it's like an electoral college thing. You vote for delegates and then the delegates vote. And that's how a majority who didn't like the contract last year didn't win out, right? You didn't strike.
Right, absolutely. The 13 Hollywood locals actually together, a majority voted against the contract, voted down. But thanks to the electoral college system that IATSE has, the contract passed.
Is that why y'all are getting together and saying, hey, look, you know, we got to find a different way of doing this, right?
Absolutely. We don't see this kind of voting system as direct or very democratic. And I think that's reflected in a lot of different processes, even outside of the contract as well in our union.
So you both form this group called Crew. It stands for Caucus of Rank and File Entertainment Workers. Tell me about how Crew came together and what your goals are ahead of next year's negotiations.
Yeah, Crew came together at Labor Notes, Labor Notes Conference in Chicago. That's where we met up together, and we realized that to get the change that we wanted, we had to form and organize outside the union and interlocally. And we're looking for better changes. We're looking for higher rates. The last time we got a 3% pay increase, but that did not keep up with inflation. And we need to bring the equity pay scale among the genders within our locals, too. So there are many things that Crew is trying to address.
I mean, we heard Matt just a moment ago in the last interview say there's a sea change happening in the union. Previously, were locals more separate?
Yeah, like in particular, animation, we are very siloed away from these motion picture workers who work on set in Hollywood. But it's only in talking to each other that we've realized that all of our interests are the same, no matter if you're working in Hollywood or if you're working in stagecraft or if you're working in live events, which IATSE covers all of. We need to start talking to each other, start realizing that it's not in our best interests to be fractured, because when we stand together, that's when we're most strongest. All we have is the people, right? And the ability to take away our value that we bring to so many people. And whereas all of these companies have, you know, conglomerations and all of the money and all of the media, it's really in talking to each other and talking about how we want a strong, united fighting union that's going to bring us the strength for a better contract.
In the interest of fairness, we did reach out to representatives of IATSE. They did not respond to our request to talk to them about this, and we await what they have to say about it. IATSE, it's a huge union. It represents tens of thousands of workers. How do you make these kinds of large-scale changes? It can't be easy. Obviously, it's one step in front of the other, right? Like, you start small and then you gain traction. Is that what y'all are trying to do?
Yeah, totally. And it's like, with our leadership, one thing that I've definitely seen, they listen and they are listening. And the whole 2020 racial reckoning that happened, I felt that my union turned an eye internally and heard from the membership and tried to make changes. That's exactly what we're trying to do now. And I feel like they are on the same journey as us.
Absolutely. We love our unions. Just, unions in general, because they don't have to be like a workplace with a few big bosses at the top making all the decisions. They can prioritize the member voice and have actively engaged members that don't have to wait until the tentative agreement is released to be able to have a voice. And it does start at the local level, right? It starts with reforming your personal local, your craft, and in our workplaces, believing that we can have a stronger voice. And that kind of escalates to the top where, you know, IATSE members currently aren't able to vote for our national representation. We have a delegate system that you have to send people in person to be able to vote for our president, which leaves out a lot of people, especially in my local. We have a lot of chronically ill or disabled or caretaker individuals who can't fly out, you know, to vote for our president. So the way that we win and win big on these issues at our workplaces is through having avenues and on-ramps to participating.
I guess the question going forward is, having seen what happened this year with the writers and the actors, how much of an appetite do y'all have to strike if you don't like what's put out there?
There's two ways I'm looking at it. The appetite is there because nothing shows people more than real-time recent examples. And we've had, though, two times we've seen that people within our industry got together, organized, struck, and got better wins for their unions. So therefore, we're all paying attention to that. We all talk about it on set. So the appetite is definitely there, but we haven't been working for a long time. And so you have to balance that. Bills have to be paid, but also we are looking for a better future. And me personally, I still don't know where I am between those two dynamics, but we understand what works. We've seen it work. And people are aware, and people have been reading. So that's also a good thing. The level of political education is much higher than last time.
Yeah. For the Animation Guild, the general temperature is ready. We have been organizing across the nation. We've just went national, but we are hurting, right? A lot of animated shows have been shut down, even though we have animation writers covered under the Animation Guild. We also have a lot of animated projects covered by the WGA, but we have seen what it's like to go without, and we were hurting before this, and we're tired of it. We're sick and tired. We feel like we're not taken seriously as a medium and as a group of people who create the things that people love. You know, we may work at the dream factory, right? But it's still a factory. We still deserve all of the coverage and all of the benefits. So I think that animation workers generally are fired up. They're ready because honestly, if we don't stand up, it's just going to continue.
Victor Boozy and Nora Meek, members of Crew, a caucus pushing to make IATSE more democratic. I want to thank you both for coming on and talking with us. Again, we did reach out to IATSE leadership to get their perspective, but have not heard back. Thank you both. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Onward now with Greater LA from KCRW and Steve Chiatakis. When you think of textiles, maybe you think of a household item like a piece of clothing or a quilt or maybe a tablecloth. But textiles can also be transformed into works of art. There's a sprawling exhibit on display at LACMA that features more than 150 woven works stitching together the history of textile art and the development of modern abstraction. Our art insider, Lindsay Preston-Zappas. Yeah, the person to talk to about this, editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review LA. She's here to tell us more about LACMA's show and a couple of other woven exhibits all across the city. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Steve.
This exhibition at LACMA has pieces that resemble dresses and quilts, right? I mentioned clothing as far as textiles go. So tell us a bit more about this show and the art on display.
Yeah, it's a really interesting exhibition. So the premise of the show, as you mentioned, has to do with the history of weaving and textile art. but specifically looking at its influence on abstraction and abstract painting, I would say, in particular. So, you know, we often think of abstract painting in a very different lineage or category than fiber art, which often has historically been sort of relegated to craft or decorative, some of these words that are a little derogatory in the art world. But, you know, the show really makes a case that, like, no, fibers and weavings have actually, you know, come alongside the history of art, history of abstraction, and have had a larger impact on the art discourse. And it really makes a case for the interconnectedness of art history that kind of goes beyond some of those barriers that I mentioned. So the show has sections that look at weaving in connection to technology, labor, basketry, wearables, so clothing, like you mentioned. So it definitely goes beyond just that singular connection to abstraction, but that's sort of the starting place of the show.
And you mentioned art history, right? So this stuff dates way back. We're talking like more than a century.
Exactly. Yeah, they have works in the show from as early as 1913 and as recent as this year. So it really tracks a lineage and progression of the medium, which is just exciting to see that history kind of collected all in one place. The last gallery as you walk through the show contains more of the contemporary work, and it's really striking to see how, you know, working artists today are really pushing that conversation forward. So, for instance, we see artists who are using unconventional materials in their weavings, like beads and plastics. But even, you know, the exhibition does a really great job of highlighting fiber artists and weavers throughout that over 100-year history that's represented that break the mold of their own time of whatever weaving could do at that time. So thinking about artists like Lenore Tawney, who pioneered what's called an open weave technique and displayed her work midair and kind of hanging off the wall. And so, you know, I think we tend to think of weaving as very rigid or conventional or traditional, but there's actually a ton of room for experimentation and play within the genre.
Can I just say that you do your own weaving, right?
True. Yeah. Yes, I'm also a weaver.
You're a weaver as well, a dream weaver. So for an artist, how is that different, Lindsay? I mean, what can you express working with fabric that you can't express like with paint or with a canvas?
I mean, for my own work as an artist, I found that weaving has this amazing ability to be really tactile, which sounds super obvious.
Textile.
You know, yes. And I think people really respond to that materiality and the familiarity and kind of touchability. There's something about weaving that really pulls people in a different way. And then I think for me too, weaving becomes this really exciting method of collaging where you can pull all kinds of things, even paintings or photographs or objects, and like shove them into the loom, and kind of the weaving can compress all of these things together in a really interesting way.
Let's talk about the fact that maybe weaving is having a moment right now. Is that what's going on here?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I would definitely say so. We've really seen, as I said, this big divide between fine art and these other categories like design, craft, even photography. And over the years, we've started to see these boundaries really slowly blur, and other mediums like ceramics, for instance, become a bit more accepted in the fine art world. There are actually a couple other weaving exhibitions up right now on view in LA, one at Le Beast Gallery and another one at Shoshana Wayne. And so for me, I'm like, okay, there's three shows right now about weavings. This is a moment. This is sort of tracking a trend. And so I think we are in this moment of seeing fiber art sort of coming into a more fine art context. And part of that could be due to this contrast of our daily life, which is often spent on digital interfaces. You know, post-pandemic, we were all really isolated and living this virtual kind of existence. And as I said, fibers kind of pulls people in and is a very tactile and inviting medium.
Tactile textile. I think that's the term of the day. Lindsay Preston Zapp is founder and editor-in-chief of Contemporary Art Review Los Angeles. Lindsay, as always, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Going to do it for us this evening. Tomorrow, how the transition is going at LADWP, the Department of Water and Power, to getting energy from all renewable sources, 100% of it. The utility has a goal of 2035. Is it on track to make that goal? You're going to hear that tomorrow right here on Greater LA. You can hear Greater LA anytime, by the way, online at kcrw.com/GLA. And by the way, you can tell us how you're doing. Maybe you have a story idea. You can pitch it there. You want to get the podcast. You can do that there. Or get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts at KCRW Greater LA. Just search those terms, KCRW Greater LA, and we are right there. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthew, Kelsey Gante, Eddie Sun, Celine Mendiola, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Sue Margulies, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Michael Vogel, Jocelyn Rohrbach, and Christian Bordall all helped run this evening's episode. I'm Steve Chitakis. Bye-bye.